Well, good morning, everyone. Welcome to day two of our meeting of the Standing Advisory Group. I hope everyone had a good day yesterday and enjoyed the breakout sessions. I was very encouraged to hear that seems like each of the breakout sessions were very successful. So that's certainly a format we'll consider for future meetings of the Standing Advisory Group. So with that, I'd like to just turn the meeting over to Marty Baumann, who will lead us through what we found out in those breakout sessions and continue our discussion on feasibility of audit indicators.
Thanks, Jennifer. It's, the breakout sessions were lively. Certainly I was in one that had a lot of interaction of everybody, and from feedback I heard from the other meetings, they were also equally lively and clearly solved all the questions that we put forward, which is the good news. So with that, I'm going to turn right away to Group A and ask Ted White to talk about thinking about the recommendation, the audit quality indicator from the investor's point of view and what ideas his group came up with. Ted?
Thanks, Marty. I'm afraid we barely made it around to the audit in quality indicators, but we did have some discussion about that. There were several topics that we wanted to provide some feedback on, including a little bit of on the definition, the model of the report, and then the factors. First, two overarching points. The group was unanimous in strongly supporting the PCAOB's efforts in this area. We very much would like to encourage the agency to take this on. It's worth the resources. This is something that the investor groups would support strongly. The second point, and related to that, is that we would also place a very strong emphasis on advising the industry to embrace this process. We view this very much as an opportunity, and hopefully each of the firms would view it this way as well. This is a way to create a competitive advantage. It's a way to communicate to investors what your strengths are. It's probably related to your ability to justify the fees and services as well. So we would encourage the industry to embrace this. In regards to the definition, frankly, we probably could have spent the entire time debating whether we need a definition or not. There was some general agreement that a definition is important, a definition is necessary, but we simply couldn't come to a conclusion on this. We felt that it ultimately is not necessary to agree on a very specific decision or definition before the PCAOB were to move forward on this and start discussing factors and actually implement something. So that I think the message here is we did not want the problems in defining this very specifically to be an impediment. In regards to the model, general interest in seeing indicators of audit quality at both the firm level and at the individual engagement level. And we did, I know it was out of our mandate, but we discussed a little bit what audit committee members might like to see and might like to be able to use. From an investor standpoint, obviously there were benefits in seeing quality indicators at very, very different levels. And the way this manifested itself in our discussions was what we thought we'd like to see is sort of a multi-factor model that did not come up with necessarily a single grade for any particular firm, but has a number of different categories in which you could see quality indicators. So it could be relatively granular, and this would serve probably more information purposes than a single grade. Some general agreement that investors are generally more concerned with audit quality than cost, and I think we had a short but fair discussion on that trade-off. In no way does this mean that audit firms are free just to charge more, but on a trade-off basis, we did tend to agree that investors were willing to pay more for high-quality audits. This kind of gets back to point number two, which is, I think the firms have an opportunity here if they can demonstrate improvements in quality that their services are worth more. Again, on the model, the group did tend to agree that it might be nice to have preferable to have the somewhat of a structured formulated report such as what maybe the PCOB or some third party would produce, but also permit the firms to produce their own statements of quality. So it's somewhat, I realize it's kind of splitting the baby, but some type of CDNA statements out of firms, let them take some liberties in how they describe their own quality. But I think that my sense was that there was a strong preference that there be some type of structured report on consistent data that's measured by a group like the PCAOB. In regards to factors, obviously this was the most difficult question here. I'm afraid, sir, we're going to punt a little bit here, but the group liked all of the, most of the samples of factors that were in the papers. No real disagreement about any of the factors that were listed. There is obviously a belief, a fairly strong belief, that the PCOB has an information advantage here, that your experience with your inspections would lead us to believe that you'd be in the best position to formulate a list of factors and perhaps come back to the SAG, as well as solicit input from other constituencies, perhaps through a concept release. And start the process of debating which factors by producing a proposal. And, of course, the SAG would be interested in seeing that. Again, most of the factors there were acceptable. We did have some discussions about input-based versus output-based. But frankly, I think that discussion was derailed a little bit. The output-based ones are interesting to us, but we're fairly hard to get our head around in the hour and a half. That's it. Done.
Thanks, Ted. Rather than taking discussion points like this right now, I thought maybe we'd hear from each of the groups and then maybe open the floor for discussion. So Chuck Noski was the chair of the second group. Chuck.
Thank you, Marty. We were the issuer's point of view, and I want to thank all of the members of Group B, as we were called, for their contribution, as well as the active participation of the board members who joined us, as well as the SAG observers. We started our discussion, I would say, by agreeing that the first order of business was the need to define audit quality, and that there were certainly both qualitative and quantitative indicators of audit quality. And I think we concluded as a group that the best drivers of audit quality were probably subjective rather than quantitative. And we did talk a bit about the UK FRC framework as being a helpful guide there. We also agreed that quantitative information is certainly useful. We talked about a number of measures. I would say we probably didn't agree on hardly any, other than I think that things like the number of restatements that the firm might have participated in the past year, the number, when they occurred, the nature of them, when they were detected and the like. We thought information around restatements would be important. We thought information around the ratio of partner hours to total staff hours was another good indicator, but we really didn't try to define a list of quantitative measures for the PCAOB to consider. We did believe, as I think the first group concluded, that the PCAOB does have a lot of information from their inspections relevant to quality, and perhaps that would be a good source of trying to define a set of broad-based indicators across industries that would be useful to share with users of the information. Perhaps there is more scientific analysis that could be done to see if there actually is a relationship between some of these quantitative measures and audit quality. But we also felt that spending an inordinate amount of time developing the mathematical precision of those indicators probably wasn't productive and shouldn't get in the way of a timely response to the Treasury Committee's proposal. We did believe, though, when those indicators are developed, that on some limited basis they should be tested in some appropriate fashion in the marketplace to see if they really do measure quality before they're released and imposed as a reporting requirement on companies or firms broadly. So again, first item, defining audit quality and then developing those measures and then doing a bit of testing was our first conclusion. We then had a good discussion about the information needed for the audit committee's selection and retention decision with respect to the independent auditor as contrasted with the information that might be needed by investors in reaching a conclusion regarding the ratification of that selection. And we focus first on the need to improve audit committee performance and talked about the important considerations that audit committees look at in the selection and retention decision. And I'll list them in no particular order, but we thought all of these were important in considering that decision. Industry expertise, both at the firm and engagement team level, the rigor of the audit plan, including the risk assessment of the specific company, audit firm responsiveness, timely resolution of issues. We thought understanding the consultation process by the audit committee of the audit firm was important, and obviously the results of PCAOB inspections, both on a firm-wide basis and an engagement-specific basis. And finally, the results of any internal inspections by the firms themselves of the firm or of specific engagements. And so those were the types of things that we felt that audit committees looked at in making their selection and retention decision. We then talked about an array of both other qualitative and quantitative information that audit committees typically look at, many of which are detailed at the bottom of page 13 of the advanced materials provided to us earlier. So we felt we needed that. There was also a need for firm information and engagement-specific information. And again, these are all things that audit committees would look at. And the view was that some audit committees that are good, without defining good, know all of this, and ask for the appropriate information and are diligent in their assessment of the performance of the audit firm, and perhaps others aren't. And so we identified an important need by audit committees to receive guidance as to literally what to ask for, what to review, and what factors to consider as a part of the selection or retention decision. As a part of that, we concluded that there would be a benefit to having increased training for audit committee members because we agreed that a key control point to ensuring audit quality was an effective, informed, and engaged audit committee, and there really was not a substitute for that. The third area that we talked about that I mentioned earlier was what kind of information would be useful to investors in deciding whether or not to ratify the board's recommendation for selection or retention of auditors. And we really broke it into two elements of information. The first, I think it was alluded to by the first group, we think an enhanced audit committee report to be included in the proxy statement would be appropriate. A lot of discussion in our group analogizing that report to the CDNA for executive compensation. Certainly, I think we all appreciate that the CDA has clearly focused comp committees and influenced their behavior and performance, and I think the perception is that if we enhance the audit committee report in several important ways that we'll get a similar behavioral improvement from audit committees. As it relates to audit quality, we felt that the audit committee report should be expanded to include a discussion of the considerations that the committee addressed in selecting the audit firm, which could include firm-level indicators and engagement-level indicators, although I would say there were differing views among members of our group as to the value and appropriateness of engagement-level data, particularly as it relates to comparisons across firms, and believe that there is a need for specific guidance on what this overall audit committee report might do. So I think what we concluded is the audit committees in general need to up their game and could benefit from both guidance and training to achieve that objective, as well as expressing their activities more completely in an audit committee report. Finally, again, information to be provided to investors. We talked about the desirability of an annual report by the audit firms and talked about the kind of quantitative information that could be provided, as well as qualitative information. As to quantitative, we talked about the desirability of providing at least certain financial information about the firm, although some of our group members were concerned that such disclosure could disadvantage smaller accounting firms. Information like client turnover, partner metrics like the ratio of partner to staff hours could be helpful, although there may be a lack of comparability, again, between small and large firms. Engagement staffing information, qualitative information such as staff training and continuing education, the quality and rigor of the consultation process employed by the firm and its services to clients, more comprehensive information about restatements and litigation that the firm was dealing with, and a view that the results of this audit firm annual report would be subject to inspection by the PCAOB to ensure an appropriate level of candor, disclosure, and accuracy, as well as comparability. And so, Marty, those were our conclusions.
Thank you very much, Chuck. And the final group was chaired by Sam Ranzilla. And Sam, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Marty. Group C was initially designed to be the auditor's perspective. I was left with the task of having a minority of auditors in my group. So I'm going to bounce around a little bit today in terms of what I provide back, trying to give you the auditor's perspective on the issue while also trying to be true to the discussion that occurred in my group. I would say we reached only one consensus, and that was that the discussion leader was wholly ineffective. Because we started off, while he was totally ineffective at the end of the day, coming in he felt that he was very effective because he had actually prepared. And we got to point one on my list and got bogged down. But I will say that we had a very lively debate. We stayed after school and actually went beyond the 5 o'clock standpoint. So I'm going to share with you again. I'm going to try to identify where it's just an auditor's perspective versus a wider perspective. But we did try to spend some time at, and I'd say that we were focused at a little bit higher level. We were not looking to identify which input or output measure was the appropriate one, but rather we started off with sort of a set of what should be the guiding principles that the PCAOB or whoever undertakes this project. What are those guiding principles that one should use? And before I start that, let me just say that auditors support this process and want to be actively involved in it. So we're keen to be a part of the process. We're keen to provide our input as to whether or not indicators or drivers of audit quality can be identified and then appropriately communicated to those who would have interest in it. So with that said, We also spent some time in my group talking about, do you need to define audit quality before you go forward? And I think we ended up consistent with what I heard from the first two groups was that, you know, in my words, you have to have a goalpost, but don't spend all of your time trying to build it and trying to get a single clear definition of audit quality. That said, though, I think that it is important to have that goalpost to come back to as you start to look at ideas, to be able to then benchmark those again. So we're of the view, let's not spend the next 3 years trying to define, get a single definition, but at the same time, let's have a goalpost. From an auditor's perspective, we think it's important that any audit quality measures that are identified actually have a direct link to audit quality. Now, that may sound sort of silly, but we think there's all sorts of quantitative measures that one could develop. But before you decide that those are things that ought to be disclosed, we ought to feel some level of comfort that there's a direct link to actually improving audit quality. And along those lines, we did talk within the group about the unintended consequences that measures can have, especially quantitative measures. And I think it's important that the measures do not become the end in and of themselves. And I think that, again, that's sort of a guiding principle as you work your way down trying to identify the most cognizant information for the audience, that you consider what those measures are and what kind of consequences that they have. Recognizing, again, that any measure that you come up with is not going to be perfect. So in other words, if we're not proposing that you study a measure and come up with a particular, you know, spend 3 years trying to figure out what that direct link to audit quality is, and we recognize that there is no perfect measure. But so with that in mind, we think it's important that any measures that are ultimately agreed to, that there be some context, an MD&A, if you will, which I think is consistent with what I heard from the first two groups as well, that, you know, just throwing some stats out there and letting people go for it, you have to give them some context around it. And we think that that's just as important as any of the metrics that might be determined. The fourth guiding principle that we identify, which I think is wholly consistent with the committee, but one that does at least give me personally some reason to pause, is that any quality measures that are identified have to be scalable across the different sizes of audit firms, or if they're not scalable, that there's different quality measures or differentiators by size of audit quality. I'm sorry, by size of audit firm, or maybe even other characteristics of the audit firm, like the portfolio of public companies. Now, that said, it seems to me that runs a bit counter to the committee's goal, which is the subcommittee's definition was definition was concentration and competition. It would seem to run counter to actually have different measures by size of firm, type of firm, the like. Although I think that is going to be a challenge as we go through that, but I think the guiding principle is anything that's done here, it would be inappropriate to disadvantage the smaller firms. And we actually heard in my group some anecdotal evidence from one of our members that some of the smaller firms, and again, this is just anecdotal, but that some of the smaller firms were concerned about putting out measures because they thought it may very well indeed disadvantage them, when in fact there should be no disadvantaged position. And as it relates to guiding principles, the last one is obvious, that cost-benefit analysis be taken into account. and that there be appropriate due process before, and I'll get to some recommendations around due process. I think that, let me before I then get to what we then talked about, and we did get to input, output, you know, qualitative, quantitative, firm, engagement level, and the key issues to consider. But I mean, I think sort of a bridge between our guiding principles and our key issues to address is that the auditors recognize that what we're attempting to do is really develop a proxy through these measures or qualitative aspects for what really does drive audit quality, and that is the independence, the objectivity, and the professional skepticism of each individual auditor, each individual audit team itself, and then the firm as a whole. And I think we recognize that that is maybe impossible to measure. And so, as at least in developing our guiding principles, we recognize that fact, and we also recognize that the firm's systems of quality control are basically designed to create that behavior. But trying to measure it on an individual engagement or even on a firm-wide basis is very difficult, so we go to proxies for that as a measure of audit quality. So let me then go to what we tried to identify as the most significant issues that the board ought to address as they go down this process. And I would say we had the most lively debate around the first issue, which is identify your intended audience. Because I think there was a genuine concern that different measures may be appropriate for different audiences. In fact, you know, there was some discussion among our group that an audit committee would probably be more interested in input measures as they go through the process of selecting and reappointing auditors, and that those input measures may very well be at the engagement level. That was one view. Other views that said users of financial statements are probably more interested in measures, output measures, and those would likely be at the firm level. I think the key point is there's very likely to be different measures that are relevant to different audiences. And I think it's important to identify who your audience is and what might be most relevant to them. We then did talk about input versus output, qualitative versus quantitative, firm level versus engagement level, and we did not even attempt to try to come up with a recommendation. I would say that our observation is it's probably some combination of each of those. Again, and it may be it's kind of a cafeteria approach, and as you go down the line and fill up your tray, it could be very well a different tray for an audit committee versus the ultimate users of the financial statements. The last item that I wanted to address was, I mean, a couple of recommendations that go back to the measures and tie back to our guiding principles. The first would be, you know, as you develop these, especially the quantitative measures, that you consider some sort of a template or the like of, you know, listing the pros and the cons of each one, carefully thinking about the way in which a particular measure would affect audit quality and would it drive audit quality versus driving the measurement, managing to the measurement. The last thing is I think relatively obvious that a field test in this particular case might be very helpful with some sort of a control group to review in addition to the overall due process. So, you know, again, that's a combination of the views of auditors as well as the views of our group, but I would say that generally overall, expressing the views of both auditors and our group, is that we think this is a worthwhile project for the board to take on, and as auditors, we're perfectly prepared to assist in its completion. Thank you, Marty.
Well, thanks, Ted, Chuck, and Sam, for both your willingness to chair the breakout groups so effectively yesterday, and thank you, Sam, for your modesty in your performance. But I'm sure it was an excellent session. So thank you for your comments this morning. Do others have comments that they'd like to add based upon their participation or the feedback they've heard this morning?
Galen
Hanson.
Yeah, just I wanted to follow up on a couple of the comments. Chuck, you had mentioned financial statements from small firms, and the ACAP recommendation actually wasn't directed at the smaller firms at all. So, you know, I don't think that was on the table with the Treasury's recommendation. And the other thing, Sam, just to follow up on the similar thing on scalability, some of these smaller firms don't proportionately, the audits of public companies are nowhere near what it would be with, say, the big four or even the second tier firms. And so what we don't want to do is see a situation where you discourage competition, or that you increase the concentration as a result of that. So I absolutely would support some sort of scalability so that you get the smaller firms to participate in this process as it makes sense, but certainly not drive them away with any sort of threat that they're going to have to disclose some things that would otherwise make them want to not participate.